Wannsee S-Bahn Station. Hi, you must be looking for me. I'm your sister's old friend from university, by the way. I'm very happy to meet you. Please call me Susan. Your sister said you're exploring an unfamiliar neighborhood in your new home, Berlin, every week. That's good, because I know this area very well. After all, I spent most of my childhood in, on, or near to the Wannsee, and as a historian, I can also give you some important historical background. Central stops on our tour through 20th century Berlin are the Villa Liebermann and the House of the Wannsee Conference. Unfortunately, I have to prepare a lecture on Max and Martha Liebermann for this evening, so we will limit ourselves to the last century. The second part of our historical walk will take us further back into history and illuminate the origins and development of the Kolonie Alsen Villa Quarter. Who will accompany you on that part of the tour, you ask? That remains a surprise. So then I would say, let's go. Our route takes us over the bridge in the direction of the marina and further along the Wannsee. With a bit of luck, you might spot a familiar face from Berlin's celebrity scene. The view here is particularly beautiful at sunset. Maybe you'll see it on the way back. Continue along the shore, past the boat and kayak rental place and the sailing club. Villa Liebermann on the Wannsee. Have you already spotted the imposing country house-style villa? This was the beloved summer retreat of the famous painter Max Liebermann, who's considered an important representative of German Impressionism. The honorary citizen of Berlin was lucky because when he had the house built in 1909, he had been able to get hold of one of the last available and highly sought-after waterfront plots in the Kolonie Alsen Villa Quarter on the Wannsee. You want to know who designed this magnificent building? Liebermann commissioned the architect Paul Otto August Baumgarten to build his summer villa. I'd like to tell you a little about the career of this famous Berlin architect. He began his training in the studio of the architect and city building officer Ludwig Ernst Emil Hoffmann. In 1901, however, Baumgarten moved to the offices of Alfred Messel and made a name for himself as his unofficial successor. On the street called Am Großen Wannsee, where we just walked along, is another example of Baumgarten's work. The villa he designed in 1906 to 1907 for the AEG director and Reichstag member Johann Hamsporn. At that time, by the way, the street was still called Große Seestraße. It was renamed in 1933. 2 years after the Hamsporn Villa was built, Baumgarten was commissioned to build a Wannsee summer house directly next to it for the artist Max Liebermann. Let's jump back in time to the 1930s, because I would like to explain Baumgarten's role in National Socialism. Did you know that Baumgarten was one of Adolf Hitler's favorite architects, along with Albert Speer, German Bestelmeier and Leonhard Gahl? He was appointed to the Reichskultursenat, the Reichskulturssenat, in 1935, but did not join the NSDAP until March 1940. Baumgarten's planned participation in the monumental construction work in Linz, which was then called the Führer's City, but which never came to pass, illustrates Hitler's enormous esteem for him. After the end of the Second World War, Baumgarten tried to distance himself from his activities during National Socialism. Let us now return to Max Liebermann. The story of the Liebermanns begins here, when Max Liebermann purchased the narrow waterfront property of about 7,260 square meters on the Wannsee in July 1909. His central wish was to be able to escape the hustle and bustle of the big city of Berlin. The plot we see here was then part of the Alsen Villa Quarter, founded by Wilhelm Conrad in 1863. More about that later. From then on, the Liebermanns were able to recuperate from the hustle and bustle of the city on their large property with its lovingly designed garden, access to the water, and stylish summer house. To Today, you will find an art museum here dedicated to the life and work of the painter. The museum is open to the public and shows changing special exhibitions in addition to the permanent exhibition. A visit to the museum is definitely worthwhile. On the ground floor, you can learn more about the life of the artist who was born in Berlin in 1847, his family, and the history of the house and this museum with the help of various media. After enjoying refreshments in the cafe, you can climb the stairs to the upper floor. The collection includes paintings and paperworks by the artist. The motif of Wannsee forms the center of the collection. These locally created works show you the surroundings through Liebermann's eyes. The variety is truly impressive. Another focus of the collection is Max Liebermann's portraits of other artists. His life's work as a painter and cultural politician, spanning a good six decades from the founding of the German Empire to the last years of the Weimar Republic, had a lasting impact on debates about art. Thus, as a founding member and first president of the Berlin Secession, a progressive art group that came together at the end of the 19th century as a counterpoint to the prevailing academic art establishment, he promoted the transition to modernism. In 1920, Liebermann became president and later honorary president of the Prussian Academy of Arts. In protest against the anti-Semitic ideology and politics of the NSDAP, he finally resigned from all public offices in 1933. As a Jew, he was forced to withdraw from the public eye and eventually died on the 8th of February 1935 in the presence of his family and close friend Käthe Kollwitz. His wife, Martha Liebermann, remained in Berlin and was increasingly restricted by numerous anti-Jewish laws. When she decided to leave Berlin at the end of 1941, it was already almost impossible for Jews to leave. To avoid deportation to the Theresienstadt concentration camp, Martha Liebermann committed suicide in March 1943. The Gestapo confiscated the majority of Liebermann's collection. You can now find a Stolperstein or a stumbling stone for Martha Liebermann in front of the Max Liebermann House at Pariser Platz 7, where the Max Liebermann residence and workplace used to be. If you have no more questions about the lives of the Liebermanns, I would suggest that we return to the garden. Here, you will encounter the special interplay of color and light that is also reflected in Liebermann's works. I have brought with me a beautiful quotation about the detailed planning and design of the villa and the surrounding garden. It comes from a letter Max Liebermann wrote on July 26, 1909, to his helping friend Alfred Lichtwag, a garden reformer and director of the Hamburger Kunsthalle Art Museum at the time. So, let me read it to you. Yesterday, I spent the whole day building, and we are pretty clear about the ground plan. I'll bring the plans with me. Not so as regards the facade, which looks too much like a farmhouse. I want a country house built by someone from the city. As in everything, the simplest things are the hardest. After Liebermann had acquired this property 5 years before the beginning of the First World War, the garden became an important source of inspiration for his artistic work. On the street side is the kitchen and flower garden, on the lakeside the ornamental garden with lawns, borders of flowers, hedges, an allée with birch trees, the otter sculpture by August Gaul, a tea house and a jetty. The listed garden was reconstructed from 2004 to 2014 according to Liebermann's original ideas and wishes. Isn't it fantastic that we can almost put ourselves in his shoes a bit when we stand here? It makes you want to start painting right away. I would now like to tell you a little bit about the use of the house and how the Liebermann's legacy has been made visible. The estate has been used in many ways over the years. As you know, Max Liebermann died in 1935, which also marked the end of the family's idyllic summer months on the Wannsee. His wife Martha Liebermann was forced by the National Socialists to sell the villa to the German Reichspost or Reich Post Office in 1940. From then on, the former family summer residence housed a Reichspost training camp for their female staff. Together with the neighboring property, the Hamspohn Villa, the Liebermann Villa became part of the surgical department of the Wannsee Municipal Hospital after the end of the war. 6 years later, the daughter, Käthe Liebermann, regained the rights to the property, but decided against using it privately and agreed with the hospital on their renting it. She died only a year later, and Maria Liebermann, the only granddaughter of the famous painter, inherited the villa and sold it to the state of Berlin. After the hospital moved out, the German Underwater Club set up a clubhouse here with an education and training center for diving enthusiasts. A milestone in the preservation of the Liebermann Villa was the founding of the Max Liebermann Society Berlin in 1995. That brought the wish for a Liebermann Museum a little closer to fulfillment. But it was not until the 150th anniversary of Max Liebermann's birth that the Berlin Senate decided to build a museum on the grounds of the painter's former summer residence. With financial support from private and institutional sources, the Max Liebermann Society was able to restore the house and garden extensively and true to the original. The museum has been in operation since April 2006, and the Liebermann Villa is open to the public. For these measures, the Society, 2 years later, received the Europa Nostra Award, which honors commitments to the preservation of cultural heritage in Europe. Wannsee Conference. On our circuit, we now continue to follow the street am Großen Wannsee along the lakeshore until we reach our next destination, the House of the Wannsee Conference. We are now standing in front of the house where, at the so-called Wannsee Conference on the 20th of January 1942, 15 high-ranking representatives of the SS, the NSDAP, and various Reich ministries decided to cooperate in the planned deportation and murder of European Jews. I always feel sick to my stomach when I stand in front of this building. On the day in question, Reinhard Heydrich, who was charged by the Nazi leadership with the final solution of the Jewish question, invited state secretaries from various ministries, as well as high party and SS functionaries, to a meeting followed by breakfast in the villa at Am Großen Wannsee 56-58 in Berlin. The topic of the conference was the coordination of the cooperation of all departments involved in the final solution. Up to that point, the National Socialist government had mainly used shootings for their murders. However, they found that these cost a lot of money and took a lot of time. Therefore, in autumn 1941, mobile gas lorries were increasingly used to kill a large mass of people quickly and systematically. Systematic killing by gas lorries had been tested in Germany before on people with disabilities. By January 1942, Einsatzgruppen, literally deployment troops, had shot over 500,000 Jewish people or gassed them to death in gas lorries in Poland and the Soviet Union. It's important to know that the procedure presented at the conference by Heydrich had already been implemented in the occupied territories as well as in concentration camps in the east. The meeting was intended to achieve Europe-wide coordination and agreement among the authorities involved in the mass extermination, as well as to plan in detail the technical implementation of the genocide. I will now read you a short extract from the minutes of the Wannsee Conference. In large work crews, the Jews capable of work will be led into these areas while constructing roads, whereby a large part will undoubtedly drop out through natural diminution. Any remaining population will have to be treated accordingly. End of quote. This bureaucratic Nazi jargon with regard to the mass extermination of people is truly frightening. The handling of this remaining population, which was part of the murder of what the Nazis themselves estimated to be 11 million Jewish people, was precisely coordinated and planned at the conference. The minutes state how the expulsion of the Jews from the so-called living space of the German people was to be achieved. The minutes further describe that about 537,000 Jews had been made to emigrate up to that point. Instead of this emigration, however, the aim was now to evacuate the Jews to the east. The minutes of the meeting, which you have already had a glimpse of, were taken by Adolf Eichmann, who was responsible for the overall organization of the deportations. The document proves the essential aims of the Wannsee Conference to inform and, above all, to gain the same understanding among the participants about the plan to murder the European Jewish population and to carry it out in a coordinated and systematic manner using all means available. In addition, the group of people affected by the genocide was precisely defined on the basis of the Nuremberg Laws and the delusional National Socialist racial ideology. The minutes also prove that all participants became aware of the genocide plan during this meeting at the latest. Today, you will find the Wannsee Conference Memorial and Educational Center in the building, which, in addition to its exhibitions, also offers a variety of educational opportunities to learn about the history of the persecution and murder of the Jewish population of Europe, the history of National Socialism, as well as its prehistory and aftermath. I can highly recommend the exhibition The Meeting at Wannsee and the Murder of European Jews. It offers you an overview of the history of persecution of the Jewish population, ranging from social and legal exclusion to the deportations and mass murder. The focus is always on the meeting at Wannsee and its consequences. Are you also interested in what happened to the participants of the Wannsee Conference after 1945? You can find biographies of the participants and societal debates about their deeds after 1945 in the exhibition. Another focus is on education about anti-Semitism and what it means to be Jewish in Europe. As a historian, I can give you a little insight into current research debates about the Wannsee Conference. One has to understand that, apart from the minutes, no other detailed documents of the conference have survived. That's why the development of the decision-making process of the Nazi leadership, the motives of the participants, and the concrete influence of the conference on the Holocaust have been the cause of discussions in historical scholarship for decades. One side emphasizes the dynamics of the persecution and extermination of the Jewish population and interprets the conference as a recorded snapshot of Hitler's long-planned and pursued goal of the Holocaust. Another position in historiography points to the competition within the National Socialist leadership for the favor of Adolf Hitler, who had advocated the most radical solution to the so-called Jewish question. It remains indisputable that those present and the bureaucracy they represented clearly and provably had, through their participation in the 90-minute conference at Wannsee, knowledge of the Holocaust and became accomplices in it. The extermination of those considered Jewish, according to the National Socialist definition, has been recorded in detail here. Dealing with National Socialism and the discrimination and exclusion of people is still very important today for democratic values today and in the future. If you like, you can now take a look at the exhibition or reflect on the significance of the Wannsee Conference on the benches available in front of the historic site. Flensburg Lion. Let's now travel even further back into the history of this place and learn more about the beginnings of this residential area. Its beginnings can be wonderfully illustrated with the Flensburg Lion that was to adorn the chic new locality. So please go in search of the lion statue. It is located in the immediate vicinity of the house of the Wannsee Conference. The patina green lion sits with its head held high on a rectangular base made of sandstone. The Idstedt lion was made in 1862 by the Danish sculptor Hermann Wilhelm Bissen as a monument to the victory of the Royal Danish troops over those of Schleswig-Holstein at the Battle of Idstedt in 1850 and erected in Flensburg. In 1864, the Schleswig-Holstein troops, supported by Prussia and Austria, were again able to defeat the Danish troops off the island of Alsen. Bismarck then had the lion statue brought to Berlin and initially placed in the armory on Unter den Linden. From 1878 onwards, it stood in the Zentralkadettenanstalt, or Central Cadet Training Academy, in Berlin-Lichterfelde. After the end of the war in 1945, the statue was brought to Copenhagen by the American Army. The original stood there in the Royal Danish Armory Museum until, after controversial discussions, it was finally returned to the city of Flensburg in mid-September 2011. Now it is located in the old cemetery there. The monument on the Wannsee shore is a copy and called the Flensburg Lion. It is closely linked to the history of the Kolonie Alsen villa quarter. It all began in 1863 when Wilhelm Conrad, a Berlin banker, friend of Bismarck and Privy Councillor of Commerce, brought up a large area of land on Wannsee to build a villa quarter and planned the first landscaping and architectural developments in the area. The land had previously been the property of the Royal Forestry Treasury and, from 1872, developed into the coveted Colonie Alsen residential area. As you can probably guess by now, the quarter goes back to the name of the Danish island of Als, which had been taken by Prussian troops at the time. Now back to the founder of the Villa Colony, Wilhelm Conrad. In 1874, he commissioned the Berlin foundry H. Pohl & Co. to cast a lion statue. Conveniently, the foundry was able to use the original, which was still in the backyard of the Berlin Armory. A small company plaque on the back of the lion records the name of the manufacturer. Have you found it? The costs for the production and installation of the Flensburg Lion Monument in Colonie Alsen were of course borne by the founder of the settlement himself, although he also received financial support from the banker Consul August von der Heydt. The monument was intended to decorate the distinguished villa colony of Alsen that he had created. Do you know what lions symbolize? Exactly. Victory, glory, and dominion. Lions are depicted in both the Danish and Schleswig-Holstein coats of arms and in the Flensburg coat of arms. The Flensburg lion, really the Idstedt lion, became the symbol of Colonie Alsen. Conrad therefore had a zinc cast of the landmark erected in the Schweiz Public Park on the edge of the settlement. How heavy do you think the statue of the lion is? A whole 2 tons had to be lifted when the lion was moved to its present location at Heckeshorn in 1938. The reason for the move was a complaint from the Danish embassy about the poor condition of the lion, which had become overgrown with trees and bushes. Heavily weathered, the monument was renovated with the support of the von Hinckendey Foundation on behalf of the Monument Preservation Office and the district of Steglitz-Zehlendorf at a cost of approximately 90,000 euros. The rededication took place on the 1st of September 2005. Since then, it can be found in its current location at Heckeshorn, directly next to the memorial site. The road Straße zum Löwen that ended at the old site no longer leads to the memorial. Today, you can watch the lion on his viewing platform as he looks out over the water to the Wannsee Lido and the Havel Lakes. You can also take a nice stroll along the shore. Not far from the Flensburg Lion, a boat landing stage with a restaurant invites you to take a break and take in the idyll. At this point, I say goodbye to you and thank you for your stimulating company. There's still a lot of work waiting for me at home, but I've made sure that the continuation of this circular route will be guided by the ideal person. All the best to you, and please give my warmest regards to your sister.
Villa Heads am Großen Wannsee, 52-54. Hello! Sorry to catch you off guard like this. I've been assigned to guide you on the rest of your tour. Who am I, you ask? You can simply call me Hans. If you want to know more about the so-called Villa Colony, you won't find a better contemporary witness than me. I have been working as a coachman for more than 20 years and have experienced the beginnings of Colonie Alsen at first hand. My employer is none other than the famous Wilhelm Conrad, the donor of the Flensburg Lion and the founder of this wonderful place. You know, I travel to this place every day on the Wannsee train line and appreciate the posh settlement as a pleasant place to work. But work is over for today, so I'm happy to accompany you on your walk. After a busy day, I always relax in the green surroundings and enjoy the magnificent architecture of the villas. A lot has changed in the meantime, I see. And the settlement has become much bigger. We'll return the same way along the street called Am Großen Wannsee along the lakeshore. I'd like to tell you about the beginnings of this villa quarter, which was so unique during the German Empire. From 1870 onwards, this beautiful area around the Wannsee was transformed into a cultural landscape. It was really impressive how quickly Berlin's upper middle classes had one magnificent villa after another built here. More and more people with the necessary small change chose this newly developed neighborhood as their place of residence. Oh, I wish I was that rich. Today, as I see it, only a few houses and gardens and some gravestones in the new cemetery in Lindenstrasse in Wannsee remind us of the glamorous world of the Wannsee Villa Colony. In my time, owning a plot in the Colony Alsen also meant sharing the neighborhood with important personalities from banking, industry, the art world, and science. On the streets of the residential area, you could meet Max Liebermann with paintings under his arm, wave to Hermine Feist on her bicycle, or see the children of the well-known Langenscheidt family, whose publishing house you surely know, playing in their front garden. We now stop to take a closer look at Villa Heads at Am Großen Wannsee 5254. This palatial villa, which is adorned by several towers and made of yellow brick, was built in 1891 to 1892 as a summer residence for Paul Heads, a factory owner and councillor of commerce. He had commissioned Wilhelm Martens, who was a study of Gropius, to design it. How nice that it can still be found as it was then. Nevertheless, a few changes do catch my eye. Today, the extensive lakefront property is divided up, and the lattice fence and the three-part gate have also been replaced. Through the bars you can see the square-like driveway that leads to the imposing villa. Please direct your gaze to the left. There you can see the former stable building. On the right, as I now know, is a low building from the 1970s. You can imagine why many of the villas were built on hills. That's right. The elevation provides a particularly good view over the Wannsee. The villa at Am Großen Wannsee 5254 was sold in 1926 by Paul's wife Ida to the chocolate manufacturer Nelson Fassbender, who continued his father's business of producing the finest chocolates. The son became co-owner of their jam factory as early as 1905, before finally becoming sole owner of both companies in 1927. With about 50 branches, Fassbender owned the greatest company of its kind in 1930, leaving the competition far behind. The new owner made some alterations to the house and property, for example, installing a riding area in the garden. Do you see the big oak in the garden, huh? Well, Hertz planted it for Adolf Hitler in the early 1930s. He sold the property and villa to the German Labour Front in 1936. The estate is now privately owned again and has often been used as a film location. For example, in the 1985 film Diddy and the Revenge of the Disinherited, the villa is the property of the film character Gustav Bullermann, played by Dieter Hallervorden, who had a total of 7 roles in the film. And back in 1964, the Villa Heads provided the setting for the Edgar Wallace film The Curse of the Hidden Vault. Maybe you even know one or both of these films. House Langenscheidt with stable building and coachman's flat. The next house is particularly striking because of its green and white colour scheme and the beautiful red decorations. Have you already spotted it? The Langenscheidt country house with stable buildings and coachman's flat is right on the neighbouring plot to the north, at Kolumiestrasse 1-2. The Villa Langenscheidt was built between 1899 and 1901 as part of the Alsen Villa colony on Berlin's Wannsee. Like many other members of Berlin's upper class, the famous publisher Karl Langenscheidt and his wife Frieda had their summer house built here by the well-known architect and castle restorer Bodo Ebhardt. At the time, Ebhardt was also considered Kaiser Wilhelm's II's favourite architect, and later he also played a system-promoting role in National Socialism and its romanticising of castles and the Middle Ages. Can you see the historical motifs of the richly designed half-timbering on the main house? The historical motifs are particularly visible on the gable ends, in the form of figures like the man and the St. Andrew's cross. During a restoration of the villa, woodworm and dry rot were discovered. However, through an elaborate restoration process, the preservation of the building was achieved. Ha! What luck that was! House Springer. This impressive building has housed flats since the 1970s. This makes the dream of waking up every morning in a villa on the Wannsee a little more attainable, even for the slightly less well-heeled. It would be great to live here, wouldn't it? What appears to be an English country house is in fact the Springer Villa on the Wannsee. The Springer house was built in 1901 for the book publisher Ferdinand Springer, according to the design of the renowned architect Alfred Messel, famous for designing the Wertheim chain of department stores. This villa went down in Berlin's architectural history as one of the first and most stylish country houses based on English and American models. With the advent of National Socialism, the renowned scientific publishing house was soon to be Aryanized. The Reich Chamber of Commerce, or RSK for short, merged the German publishing houses. The anti-Jewish measures and laws became increasingly drastic and affected several members of the Springer family. The publishing house itself was preserved mainly because the Nazi regime did not want to give up the high profits of the established scientific publishing house. Let us return to the history of the Springer country house. The Springer heirs sold the estate to Rustica AG for Grunterwerb in 1922. With the onset of National Socialist rule, the house became the headquarters of the NS Hagoschool am Wannsee, part of the National Socialist Organization for Crafts, Trade and Commerce. Established by the German Labour Front, the NS Hagoschool was aimed at the middle classes working in trade and commerce and their political training. In 1940, the Nazi leadership chose the imposing villa as the site of their Wannsee training castle of the NSDAP. After the war, medical staff moved into the building, and until 1979, it was an official hospital of the state of Berlin. Today, it is a listed building and, as you already know, contains flats. Sweden Pavilion. Every day, the people of Berlin relax on the shores of Wannsee and escape the stress of the big city. In fact, Wannsee as a recreational area is not a phenomenon of the modern age. An important step in its development as a popular excursion destination began in the 1860s and 70s with the construction of the Wannsee Railway and the colony Alsen, As Berlin's upper middle classes settled in the new residential area, the demand for upscale restaurants increased. These exclusive restaurants opened, for example, in two exhibition buildings purchased for the Volksfest of 1873 in Vienna. These were the Kaiser Pavilion, which was located directly at Wannsee railway station, and the Sweden Pavilion at Am Großen Wannsee 28-30. The original wooden Sweden Pavilion was replaced at the beginning of the 20th century by the architects Witt and Bischoff with a larger building in the English country house style. The restaurant located there quickly established itself as the hotspot of the neighborhood. Local resident Max Liebermann was also a frequent visitor to the first-class restaurant. He even celebrated his 80th birthday and his appointment as an honorary citizen of the city of Berlin there. The popular restaurant overlooking the Wannsee existed until the 1930s. Now, let me tell you a particularly interesting chapter in the history of the Sweden Pavilion. When the Foreign Office set up the building in 1940 as the so-called Radio Engineering Research Facility, no one could have guessed that the Sweden Pavilion would become the facade of Germany's largest and most important radio interception facility. Can you imagine? For only a few years earlier, one had served fine dishes. The National Socialist authorities now hid special antennas that enabled the secret work of the so-called Seehaus Special Services. From 1941 onwards, this service recorded broadcasts in 36 languages and employed around 500 staff members, officers, and translators. In the post-war period, a restaurant was located here again for a few years, and in 1956, the Arbeiter Samariter Bund, a charity providing above all ambulance services, set up a nursing home. In 2003 and 2004, the building was renovated and converted into flats. Today, the listed country home directly on Berlin's Wannsee offers approximately 2,965 square meters of living space. Those who rent the renovated flats can enjoy parquet flooring with underfloor heating, large, fully equipped bathrooms, and fitted kitchens, as well as terraces, balconies, and conservatories, and depending on the flat's orientation, a direct view of the Große Wannsee with its natural shoreline. Not to be missed is the private jetty with 41 boat moorings and an 80-meter-long waterfront. Ha! A true dream home that the likes of us can only dream of. Pupil's Rowing House, Boathouse. We are now passing the house of the Schüler Ruderverband Wannsee, or the Wannsee Pupils Rowing Federation, SRVW for short. It's really great that children have the opportunity to choose rowing as a sport at school. I wish it had been there in my day. After all, rowing offers the perfect contrast to sitting still in class, plus a good dose of fresh air. Would you like to hear more about the organization of the federation? Out of interest, I asked a representative of the umbrella organization and can tell you a lot about it. The umbrella organization, SRVW, has about 30 independent rowing crews. They can learn to row in about 200 boats here on the wonderful Wannsee. Without the voluntary board and the support of a boat builder with his own workshop, the work of the SRVW, which is the largest sub-association of seven locations of the Schüler Ruderverband Berlin, or the Berlin Pupils Rowing Federation, would not be possible. The Pupils Rowing Federations are in turn members of the State Rowing Federation and the State Sports Association. Can you guess how long the rowing program for Berlin schools has existed here in Wannsee? For over 100 years. About 48 Berlin schools offer school children the chance to learn rowing in the afternoons. The large boathouse even has overnight accommodation. Great, isn't it? Those who are fit and healthy and want to row in the SRVW can, after presenting a swimming certificate, join their school rowing club. They can then choose between touring and racing boats and between single boats and eights. First, the children and youth learn the rowing technique in the basic training. They usually row on the waters of Berlin and the surrounding area in touring boats. Some schools even offer touring trips on the Elbe, Elle, Weser, Moselle or Moselle, Main, Danube, and Saale, or in even more distant rowing areas between the Camargue and Masuria. Following the basic training, there is the possibility of attending a course that enables you to row your own boat. As you know, rowing is not only fun and recreational, but also a competitive sport. The competitions start as school rowing regattas, with relay rowing and short-distance races on the Wannsee. Those that are successful can make it to the national finals of Youth Trains for the Olympics in Grunau, or to the Pupils' Trophy in Hanover. Talented youngsters who excel are also referred to other rowing clubs in Wannsee, enabling them to take part in performance training and junior championships. This also opens the door to the Olympics, though this is certainly where many ambitious rowing enthusiasts' big dream began. Kleist Memorial. The Kleist Memorial is the last stop on our way. Under tall trees between Bismarckstrasse and the Kleiner Wannsee lies the grave of Heinrich von Kleist and Henriette Vogel, the poet and storyteller born in 1777, and his terminally ill girlfriend committed suicide together there on the 21st November 1811. The memory of the last hours in Heinrich von Kleist's life can still be felt at this place. I will now read to you from Heinrich Kleist's farewell letter to his sister Ulrike. I cannot die without having reconciled myself, contented and cheerful as I am with the whole world, and thus also, above all others, my dearest Ulrike, with you. Let me take back the severe statement contained in the letter to the Kleists. Truly, you have done. I do not say what was in the power of a sister, but in the power of a human being, what is possible to save me. The truth is that I could not be helped on this earth. And now, farewell. May heaven grant you a death only half as joyful and inexpressibly cheerful as mine. That is the warmest and most fervent wish I can muster for you. End of quote. Why the two were not buried in a cemetery? At that time, the church forbade the burial of people who had committed suicide, as this was considered a sin. Therefore, it was decided to bury the bodies here at a spot where their suicide took place. But it is also possible that the burial took place some distance away. The grave, or just the gravestone, may have been moved later. This is also a fitting place to delve deeper into the life of Heinrich von Kleist. At the age of 30, Kleist chose Berlin as his new place to live and work. It was in the capital of the German Empire that he wrote his best-known stories. He also published the newspaper Berliner Abendblätter, which provided the population with local news. Only recently I read his novella, Michael Kohlhaas, and can hardly believe that Kleist was denied greater recognition and appreciation of his works during his lifetime. We can only speculate about the possible motives that led him to embark on his last journey to the Kleiner Wannsee with the firm intention of committing suicide. Possible influences were the lack of recognition of his works, the accompanying financial hardship, and his wartime experiences. If you would like to learn more about the poet's life and death, you will find information boards with background information on the way to Kleist's grave at the corner of Bismarckstrasse and Königstrasse. The restrained and naturalistic atmosphere of the grave and green area has turned the grave surroundings into an enchanted place over the past decades. I think the grounds invite you to linger and to reflect. Perhaps it can inspire you to write a few lines yourself in memory of Kleist. Unfortunately, I must now say goodbye to you. You know, as a coachman, my work begins at first light in the morning. It was a pleasure to be able to present this special and diverse part of the big city to you and to take you back a little to my time and the beginnings of the Alsen Villa Quarter. The Wannsee S-Bahn station is close by and will take you back to the hustle and bustle of the city centre. But maybe you'd like to explore the area on your own or just relax on the shore of the Wannsee. And maybe even put your feet in the water. In any case, I wish you a wonderful stay here at the beautiful Wannsee and a safe journey back.